This interview and the entire Real Men Connect podcast is brought to you by Ministry Men of Influence, the first ever men's only Christian mastermind group for aspiring speakers, writers, podcasters, coaches, and course creators. So if you're looking to turn your God-given passion into a full-time profession, but you need help and don't know where to start, just go to mensministry.org for details. That's ministrymen, M-E-N.org.
Welcome to Real Men Connect. Are you ready to be the extraordinary man, husband, father, and leader God called and created you to be? Then get ready to receive wisdom and guidance from some of the country's most respected men of faith as you learn everything you need to know to go from good man to great man, God's way. No judgment, no shame. Just real men with real challenges seeking real change. All for God's glory.
Hello, mighty men of God, and welcome to the Real Men Connect podcast, where we help good men become great men God's way. I'm your host, Dr. Joe Martin, and every week we interview some of the nation's most respected and accomplished men of faith to find out what it really takes to become the kind of husband, father, and spiritual leader God called and created us to be. Each interview session is packed with practical, proven biblical principles you can immediately apply in your relationships, on your job, and in your community. Today we have with us a personal friend of mine. His name is Ted Alling, and Ted is a serial entrepreneur. He's a philanthropist. He's a husband and a father of three children, and lives right here in our beautiful city of Chattanooga, Tennessee. Now, to say that Ted is a successful entrepreneur is an understatement, because as the former co-founder and CEO of Access America Transport, Ted's leadership guided the company through over a decade of growth, generating more than $490 million in revenue. And he is currently a managing partner of the Lamppost Group, where he actively recruits and mentors entrepreneurs. And I thought my job was tough. And Ted also founded AAT Carriers, Reliance Partners, and Dynamo, which is a logistics accelerator program. And he and his amazing wife, Kelly, recently started the Chattanooga Preparatory School for Disadvantaged Boys in our city. Now, I met Ted last year through a mutual friend of ours, and I'll give a quick shout out to my brother, Damon Dunn. And Ted asked me to serve on the board of directors of Chattanooga Preparatory School for Boys, and I accepted. And I asked Ted to come on the show today to talk to us about, I would consider, a somewhat controversial topic that shouldn't be controversial at all, and that's about financial prosperity and faithfulness. And Ted usually talks about business, leadership, motivation, and performance. So I'm asking him to step a little bit out of his comfort zone today to be on our show, because I'm hoping Ted will shed some light on this very delicate topic and to get us to start thinking differently when it comes to making money and serving God, because I don't believe they're mutually exclusive. So with that being said, help me in welcoming my friend and brother in Christ, Ted Alling, to the Real Men Connect podcast. Thanks for joining us, Ted.
Hey, Joe, thank you so much. Joe left out there. Joe's been one of the biggest mentors of my life the last year. So I'm so thankful that God put him in my life to help me kind of guide a lot of wisdom through starting the school and helping me to be a better husband and father. So anyway, it's been a pleasure getting to know you, Joe.
You know, and that's a compliment coming from you, Ted. And Ted, I have to tell you, full disclosure, when I was putting together your intro, I was going to introduce you as my little brother, but I thought you might make a joke about that. So I didn't put that in the show.
I love it.
So thank you for not mentioning my height. But Ted, man, no, seriously, man, I am so excited about you being on the show today, because this is a topic we haven't discussed. You're talking about, we're approaching like over 300 episodes, and we're going into entering about year two. Year three will be back. It's when we start up in January. And we've never talked about this topic. And I realize that a lot of people don't talk about it, especially when it comes to the church. And I think we're the people to bring this forward, because Real Men Connect, we do tackle the tough issues. So I'm excited about you being on the show, man. But before we get started and jumping in, because I got a lot of questions for you, Ted, we always ask our guests when they come on the show to share with us their favorite Bible verse and what gives them inspiration in the Word of God. I can't wait to hear what yours is, man. What's yours?
You know, that's great. And it came to me in an early age, probably my sophomore year in college. My granddad gave me a bronze eagle, and on the bottom of it, he inscripted Isaiah 40:31. Mm-hmm. And it has really stuck with me my whole life. I just kind of feel like I think about that verse a lot of times when I'm struggling or I'm weary. But it's, those who hope in the Lord will renew their strength. They'll soar on wings like eagles. They'll run and not grow weary. They'll walk and not be faint. And so it's just been, I think about my granddad when I think about that verse, and it's just something that comes to me when I need it most.
You know, and that's a very inspiring verse for a lot of people. And that's one of my favorite verses as well. And Ted, that's a great way. You mentioned your granddad. So that's a great way to start this conversation before we get into the topic, because, you know, I know you personally. And for now, it's been a little bit over a year, and I've got a lot about your story. And you've had a lot of great men in your life, which I got to tell you, I'm jealous because I always wonder what would happen if I had those kind of men. But you know, I'm saying that tongue in cheek. But I want you to tell us a little bit about your story, man. What was it like growing up for you as a kid? Because you grew up in Birmingham, is that correct?
Yeah. So I grew up in Birmingham, but at an early age, actually, my dad was in the Army. He was a oral surgeon, and we lived in Germany. Mm-hmm. And so I think some really some important years of my life was ages like 4 to 7. I lived in a army base in Germany, and I kind of distinctly remember being my dad would send us like to half on the base for school, and then half I'd go to a German school. And I really distinctly remember going into a school and not speaking a language and being the kid that everyone's looking at, and, you know, like, man, kind of being felt left out a little bit. But I remember the teachers were sweet and that sort of thing. But at that time in my life, it was something I think kind of stuck with me, being the outsider. So I then grew up, and I moved to Birmingham, really great, I'd say upper middle class community. My dad ended up starting a practice, his oral surgery practice. My granddad was also a oral surgeon. So they had their practice in Birmingham, went to a great high school called Vestavia High School. I'm the oldest of three boys. My dad is, I could talk about my dad the whole podcast, but some stuff that I really can remember growing up. He will call his patients every single night. So if he worked on you that day, he's calling your patients. Wow. And if he knows you, he goes and visits your house. And so I just thought that was normal. Like growing up, like, oh yeah, doctors would go see their patients every night, or they call, you know, my dad would go in a room. And I literally, I thought that was like a normal thing. And obviously that's not, but it just, I think at an early age, I saw how much he cared about people, and he treated everyone the same. Didn't matter race, background, occupation. He just, CEO or, you know, peach farmer, he treated you the same way. And so that was kind of the guiding light in my life growing up. And my mom is, she's a nurse, and she worked for my dad, and she has just got intense work ethic. She's she gets up 4:30 every morning, and she used to run, but she's had two knee surgeries. She walks probably 4 or 5 miles in any temperature. And, so I just really think I got a lot of my work ethic from my mother and a lot of my heart from my dad. And my mom's got a big heart as well. And so, oldest of three boys, I was I say this a lot, I was a very mediocre student, very mediocre athlete. I wrestled and played football, but I was always a really big cheerleader for other people. One of my brothers, or both my brothers, actually really good athletes, and I was always showing up at all their games and doing the scores in the stands and kind of cheering them on. And so that's kind of a theme that I've just been lucky that I really like to see other people succeed. And so anyway, went to high school, had a very transformational coach that I met with when I was in high school, or I had in high school. And he's actually still coaching, and he was just inducted into the National Hall of Fame for high school football coaches. He's a winningest all-time Alabama football coach, which is a big deal in Alabama.
And what's his name, Ted?
His name's Buddy Anderson. Mm-hmm. And he has got so many buddyisms. if you lay down with dogs, you're going to get fleas.
Right.
if and butts were candy and nuts, we'd have Christmas all year long. poor me's, you can't have the poor me's. And so he had all these little, these phrases he would say. But he didn't care really about winning or loss. He'd want to win in the character bucket. And it was amazing. I look back on how much, he would drive the school bus to the games. I don't think coaches do that. I think they probably have people to drive it. And we'd win. He'd sing a song. We'd come in. He gives the same speech before every single game. And most of these players can all still memorized it. But the pride, the thing that I really took most from him, every Wednesday night, he was big into FCA, Fellowship of Christian Athletes. Mm-hmm. And he would host an FCA dinner at his house on Wednesday nights. And it's like, this man has got three daughters and a great family, great wife. And he is spending even more time with us on Wednesday nights in his house, serving us pizza and sharing, sharing his faith. And so, just a lot. He honestly did not even encourage anyone to play college football. Like, that was not, like, most coaches, I think, were, you know, into hype films and in all this stuff. And he thought that was a dead end. And I think, I believe he was right. I mean, if there was kids that could play, he would obviously help them, but it was not, like, encouraged at all. And so I just feel really lucky to have really strong male role models. So anyway, grew up in Birmingham, thought I was going to go to University of Alabama, and ended up, actually, a guy I played football with had just transferred from Alabama to Samford. He goes, you know, Ted, I think you'd be a great fit at Samford. So went to Samford, not really far away from my house, but God really wanted me to be there. Really involved with my fraternity in college. I joined a Sigma Nu, and I met my two best friends, which now are my two co-founders in my business. Met them like the first day of school, and it was funny. The three of us are completely different. I'm very outgoing, and you know, I like to meet a lot of people. One of my partners is a kind of financial guy. He loves to, you know, read the Wall Street Journal. Mm-hmm. He loves the numbers. He's very very risk averse. And then my other partner is very technical. He's kind of more the programmer, and but he's also the person that goes through a Subway line and at a restaurant, and he sees like two people are doing the condiments and someone's doing the bread and no one's at the cash register, and he's like losing his mind. He's like, oh my God, come on. He sees bottlenecks everywhere he goes. Mm-hmm. And so anyway, the three of us, you know, we met in college, and we ended up starting our businesses together. But then my senior year, my wife and I were both RAs, residence assistants. I met my wife in college our senior year, and I just knew right away she's going to be my wife. Somehow it took me three times asking her out before she'd say yes. you got to be persistent, guys, out there for something that you want. And anyway, we met our senior year, and 8 months later we were engaged. 8 months later we were married. So that's kind of a little bit about my background. Growing up, very supportive family. My parents were very big in the church. My dad taught Sunday school, which was really neat. And he's a very good storyteller. And so he would just kind of share stories about his life and the way, you know, he would see God intervening in his life that week, or he'd just tell really great stories. So I don't know. I feel it's weird. I asked my dad this the other day. I said, Dad, the older you get, are the luckier you feel with the circumstances where you're born and like the background you had. Mm-hmm. And we both say yes. And I, you know, and I'll get into our school more. It's just, I tell my brothers this all the time. I'm like, guys, we have to do some really extraordinary things, 'cause we've been given such a great upbringing with so many positive male influences, such an amazing home. And so we have to all go big and help a lot of other people. Because there's a lot of people out there. I know every day of my life that I was unconditionally loved. And I know a lot of people out there know there's some days they were not unconditionally loved. So I don't know. It's a way that I'm trying to bring up my kids and our students and a lot of other and people that I mentor.
You know, and Ted, knowing you now and getting to know you a little bit better, that your life makes sense to me now, because I always wondered what kind of man would you create if you had the foundation of doing the way God intended it, which is for that patriarchy as it is passed down from generation to generation. And based on what you're telling me in your story, that faith has been part of your life as long as you can remember, because of your dad and your grandfather, and as well as your mother as well, and then even the coaches around you. So is that safe to say that you, because I hear a lot of stories with men who grew up in some great environments and great homes, but for some reason they pulled away from the faith. I don't think you have that in your storyline, is it?
Yeah, no, not at this point right now. And, you know, I don't, it's just by the grace of God. I mean, there's no really reason why it's been like that. I think it's just been a very very easy life for me, honestly. Like, I'm just very blessed. It's just like, I can't even, you know, I've definitely had struggles in my past, in my life. And, you know, everyone does struggle with a lot of things. And, but this has been just the intentionality of the way my parents raised us. And my parents are both, Midwesterners. They're both from Indiana. And so they have a lot of just kind of that Midwestern work ethic, and they didn't really value things. So we never, like, I always had a job when I was young. I always, you know, when I was 15, I was working. I didn't have to be, but, you know, my parents didn't give me things. I never got a car. I didn't, you know, they made me work for everything, and they had money, but I'd really never, I never knew it, or never really saw it. So it's, you know, that's the way to live. And I can say that I've kind of have not done as good a job with that. I've definitely lived a little bit more lavishly than my parents have, but it's weird. And we'll probably get into this a little bit. You know, I've had multiple homes, I've had nice cars, and that's some goals that I maybe have set myself for myself when I was in college. I'm a huge goal setter, and I still have a list of things. When my senior year, I actually started really listening to Tony Robbins tapes pretty early in life, like in high school, I'd say. And I still love Tony, but I set some things on some material things that I really wanted in life. And I'm telling you, that brings you you hear stuff, you hear people like, oh yeah, you know, having nice cars and houses and stuff like that, that's the goal. But man, I'm telling you, it's just a headache. Having more stuff is just a massive distraction and headache.
You know, and Ted, we're going to get into that as well. You know, you mentioned Tony Robbins. I actually had a chance to interview his son for our podcast.
I heard that.
Yeah. Yep. And so, that was interesting because, you know, he didn't want to promote that, you know, he's Tony Robbins' son, but I knew he was Tony Robbins' son. But to hear his story and his faith story as well, you know, even though this is a side note, because we got a lot of stuff to cover, Ted, but you mentioned about, you know, not following the same pattern that your dad did, as far as you didn't even know that you guys had a lot of money. But do you ever get pushback from your parents about that, that they see you doing things that they didn't do or buy things that they didn't buy? Did they ever give you any pushback for that?
You know, that's a funny story. I don't think so. I think they're super non-judgmental. And so they're definitely proud of, you know, everything we're doing, and they definitely love seeing us give back. And my dad, I should mention this, he is really big in a prison ministry. And he's been doing that. He's funny. He calls it his lake house because he goes once a month. Once a month, he goes to the prisons and he spends a night down there. And I'll tell you a really neat thing that happened to me probably about 6 years ago. He asked me to go with him to the prison, and you know, I'm up for anything. And so I went with him, and the general population, you know, is kind of, they're kind of sharing their word. And then some guy was talking about my dad, and he didn't know I was his son. And it was just like, wow, my dad is having such an impact on here.
Wow.
And he is kind of interesting too. This is, you know, another topic we could talk about. It was interesting. The general population in the jail that we went to, and probably in all America, was mostly African-American. And then we went to the death row, and that was mostly white. Which was just a very interesting, you know, and that's the death row people are, you know, that's the folks that have really, you know, murdered folks, done some really bad stuff. That was just an interesting take on that. But we walked into death row, and those people, everyone of them, like, walked up and hugged my dad and loved my dad. And my dad is just, he just finished a, he was a spiritual advisor for one of the guys. And it was a really, and the guy just, he was actually killed about 3 months ago. He was murdered. He asked my dad to show up to that. And it was really, really tough for my dad, because the guy and my dad had a really sweet bond. They would write each other letters, really neat letter. And the guy wrote me a letter once, a really, like, touching letter about our school and kind of about the stuff we're doing. And he was an artist, and my dad is also an artist. He's kind of a Renaissance man. And so he would take art supplies in for this guy. So I've got some of this guy's drawings in my house. And so my dad went to his execution, and it was, you know, dad said it was really hard, and they had a really great conversation right before. And my dad was the only one there. Like, no, the guy had no one else. No, none of his family showed up. And so my dad got done with execution, got in this van, and as soon as he got to his car, my dad's best friend from Indiana drove 8 hours to be there for my dad. And it was just like such a dad, like, got out of the van. He said it was like he was emotionally exhausted. And he opened up the door and his buddy was there, drove 8 hours to say, "Rock, I'm here for you, buddy." And so, like, that's, you know, when you hear stories like that, and just like, you know, actions speak louder than words. Like, for me, like, I just, in life, I just go around and I say, I don't look what people are saying. I'm just looking at actions all the time.
Mm-hmm. And so, you know, Ted, it's funny because, you know, I'm always asked about what defines real manhood. And one of the qualities I say is that he leaves a legacy of faith that lasts generations. He's not a situational man. He's a generational man. And with your dad, I mean, he's leaving a legacy of faith that, I mean, you would hope that we could do the same. With generations to come, that our children and their children, or they would hear stories about, man, what your dad, what kind of man your dad was. And so your dad is holding up the mantle, man, for you. I mean, some big shoes to fill, man.
And he is, you know, I think he's a very, like, humble leader. Mm-hmm. He's not, it's not the picture of what most men would think. He's not like some big, you know, like, whatever, like a big personality, like that's just super strong. He's super humility comes to mind. Yeah, I don't even know. It's just a very loving heart. Yeah. And that's not what most, you know, people think men are supposed to be today. Right. You know, you're supposed to be this prototypical, you know, business person wearing these, you know, expensive clothes and driving these cars and blah, blah, blah. It's the opposite of that.
You know, and Ted, that's the great segue into jumping into this topic, because there seems to be two types of mindsets in the church. And when I say church, I'm talking about church collectively, that either you can't be wealthy and be a good Christian, or if you're a good Christian, then you shouldn't be poor. And it's causing a lot of division among believers. And I'm not saying that we can erase that divide, but I do think you can help us understand how we can be better at managing the two. So I want to start with a question for you about your personal philosophy, because you kind of alluded to it a little bit earlier. But what's your personal philosophy when it comes to God and money? The TED school of God and money as you're teaching your kids.
Yeah, I think I've, Kelly and I have always been, we've tried to be generous givers. And I think, you know, after, you know, we pass away, I think that'd be the greatest compliment that someone could call us, generous people. Mm-hmm. And so it started even, you know, and I mean, when Cal and I started life, we used to listen to Dave Ramsey. We did the envelope stuff. I'm sure you've talked about that on your podcast before. And so we've always been trying to be good stewards of our money. And so we've started, even when we didn't have a bunch, we were giving to our church and the things that we really cared about. And then as we've, you know, have gotten lucky with, you know, our Access America exit, and which, you know, it was not even a thought that we would not give away most of the money. Mm-hmm. You know, I mean, there's nothing in us that, like, oh, we want to set up these long-term trusts that, you know, that would take care of our kids forever. You know, in fact, the money that we, you know, some of the money that we're giving to our kids, we're making them give away a certain amount of a part of that every year. Mm-hmm. So, like, they're going to get some money, but they've got to give it away. And so, to causes they want to give away to. So we have been very intentional about giving away a lot of our money to something that we're really passionate about. You know, I've heard Oprah talk once, and she said in one of her books that, daily people are, you know, different nonprofits and folks are asking us for things. And, Oprah says, you know, she finally hit something in life where she said, you know what, if I'm not crazy passionate about something, like if I'm just not totally in love with something, I'm not going to give money to it. Because I found Kelly and I found myself last couple of years giving some really big checks to things, really big. And then people kind of saying, oh, wow, that's, you know, you can only give us whatever, $25,000, $50,000 for something. And I'm like, what? That's insane. That's mm-hmm. so much money. And people just kind of taking it for granted. Mm-hmm. That just is, that's, you know, that wasn't cool. And so we decided to go just really big and deep into something that we really think is a need and that we care about. And you know, sometimes I worry we're giving too much. And then I'm like, you know what? I've got to just have faith because the Lord has provided my whole life. And I've gotten, you know, I've gotten even more than I thought I might have. And you know, we've definitely been blessed. And so this is not our money. This is the Lord's money. Like, I really believe that. And so that's kind of my thoughts on it, is that we try to be good stewards with our money. And we've sought a lot of good advice and talked to people that have been in similar situations that we've been in. You know, we had our business and we sold it and we took a year sabbatical and we moved to London, which was one of the, you know, coolest experiences of my life. I mean, just got all of our kids thinking globally and put our kids in British schools. And I kind of came back and our financial advisor goes, okay, victory lap is over. So, I'll never forget that. And so we kind of put together a plan and he helped us build out some thoughts with this school that we've started. And so that's kind of some thoughts that on giving from our point of view.
You know, now you had mentioned earlier about your dad being a humble man. And I was listening to another interview that you did. And you were talking about you and Alan Davis and Barry Large, your two best friends from college, and about you when you guys first started launching Access America Transport. You said that you had two goals. One is to be the best company to work for, and two, to build a $100 million company, which you obviously exceeded. But I want to know, how do you strike the balance as a Christian man being both humble and hungry at the same time? Because you were hungry, but at the same time,
that's no doubt.
But if anybody met you, they also know that you're a humble guy too as well.
Yeah.
So how do you strike that balance as a Christian man? Because I think that's part of the problem of why we struggle with financial prosperity and faithfulness.
Yeah, I think, you know, I set really high expectations for my life. We're not here long, you know. I mean, this world is passing us by every year. It seems to get faster. And so everything I want to do, I want to go deep into, and I want to do excellent. I am a competitive person, and so I do like to win at things. And so that's definitely somewhere in me. But I also, with Access, we wanted to be the best place in America to work. I knew if we were the best place in America to work, we'd hire the most positive people and positive people, productive people. The stuff that brought us the most joy was people saying, "Hey, Ted, I just bought my first car. Ted, just bought my first house. Hey, Ted, we are getting to send our kids to this private school because of this company that we've built, and you've been able to share our success." And something that, you know, I don't really talk about a lot, but like I was CEO of the company. I think we had three or four people making more money than I did. Mm-hmm. And I was CEO. Mm-hmm. And I think in America, there's so many people that hold the power up top, and they're just their arms around it and they don't want to give it up and whatever. I was trying to replace myself every day. One thing that I'm good at, I'm a master at being the dumbest person in the room. I've patented that. And so I am very good and very confident being surrounded by a lot smarter people than I am. And I say this all the time. CEOs kind of have three roles. One, you're supposed to set the vision and mission for your company. Second, you're supposed to hire the smartest, brightest, hardest working people you can find. And third, you're trying to keep them happy. Mm-hmm. That's all you're supposed to do. And so we hired a lot of really bright people. We paid them really well. And the year before we sold our company, Kelly and I gave away a bunch of our stock to our top people. And we ended up making around 15 millionaires. Mm-hmm. And this was our own money. This is money that, that we were going to benefit from. But we said, you know, we couldn't sleep at night. These people were doing, you know, these were some of our top leaders. And so, you know, one of my favorite quotes is from Zig Ziglar, and it goes something like this: if you can help enough people get what they want in life, you can have anything you want. Mm-hmm. And so I'm constantly walking around just being like, hey, how can, you know, the Joe Martin podcast, Real Men Connect, hit its full potential? How can, and we used to, at our company, you know, we said this once, we said, hey, we'll pay anyone $2,000 right now to leave. Okay. And if someone needed $2,000 bad enough to leave our job, they didn't need to be at our company. Mm-hmm. And so I want to help people find their passion in life. And I think about it a lot. I was mentioning my coach, that coach earlier, he found his passion. Like, he was put on earth to go coach football and teach boys about men. And so Kelly and I are just trying to go around and help people find what they're supposed to do in life, and find their passion. And, you know, I think God has given us all certain gifts. And so I'm trying to help people find what their gift is. Mm-hmm. And then there's a thing called Y Combinator, and it's the best companies in the world are pitching. Like, this is where Airbnb came out of, Airbnb. This is where, like, Reddit and Lyft. So the best tech companies in the world go to this thing out in Silicon Valley. Mm-hmm. And a guy that I know was out there, and he pitched in front of, like, you know, Apple's there and Facebook and all these amazing investors. And he got up there and pitched, and he nailed it. He was the only person from Tennessee to pitch ever. And he just absolutely ripped it. And he got done. He goes, Ted, knowing you were in the crowd and knowing you and you believed in me gave me the confidence to go up there and do that. And from that moment, I just said, you know what? God wants me to help people believe in themselves even more. Mm-hmm. So really, that's what I feel like I've been put on earth to do, is to help believe in other people. And because sometimes, you know, we don't have that confidence. And I think from my background, I've got all this confidence because I've had all these amazing people invest into my life. And so I've got to share that with people that have not had that, those experiences. And so I'm just trying to believe in other people at this point.
You know, you mentioned Zig Ziglar. I had a chance to meet him when I was in my 20s. When I first got started speaking, a mutual friend of ours introduced us, who was a mentor to me, when he saw me get into the speaking business. And I had a chance to spend a weekend with Zig. And I think about how I was frustrated when I met with him, because I'm expecting him to give me business advice and all this other stuff, about how to get into the speaking business and everything. And at the end, I said, Mr. Ziglar, I said, I've been with you 2 days and you haven't really given me any strategies on marketing and that kind of stuff. And he told me, he quoted exactly what we've heard him quote a million times. He said, Joe, first of all, he said, if you want to succeed as a speaker, he said, be your message. He said, be a person of your message, that you must live it. And he mentioned some speakers who I won't mention on air, who he did not care too much about, who you would know, Ted, if I mentioned them as speakers who he didn't care much about. But he says, Joe, listen to me. He says, if you want, he said, you probably read it in one of my books somewhere. He said, but I always say, if you help enough people get what they want, you would get what you want. And I think you have lived that. Your life has been a personification of that particular message, Ted, based on what you're telling us right now, is mm-hmm. that's where a lot of your success has come from, of helping people get what they want.
Mm-hmm.
You know,
yeah,
Ted, I want to ask you about this, man. Because when it comes to being a Christian, many men feel guilty for making a lot of money. Or being rich, as if it's a sin or something. Why do you think so many Christian men struggle with that? And did you struggle with that?
Yeah, that's you know, I think I don't think I ever really have. I mean, and I think just because I've had a plan to do big things with my money, I just look at it. It's been a gift from God, and I do feel, you know, people do look at you differently, you know, and some people you can feel some judgment sometimes. Mm-hmm. I've never really felt, though, like ashamed of it, because I know how hard I've had to work for it.
Right.
I have a very kind of crazy schedule, and I'm just not really, I don't know. I don't even feel like I think I've got a lot more to go and a lot more to give. And there's really big things God's put on our heart. And so I can definitely see how people can feel judged. I mean, I've walked out of a movie. My wife and I have walked out of a movie theater on a date night, and people will stop us and ask to give, like, to their middle school band or something. And I'm like, are you serious? This is a Friday night at 9:30. I'm with my wife and I don't even know you. And so that, like, stuff like that is, you know, that's just intrusive. But I've got to just, you know, like, I know God is in control of everyone and everything happening. And so they, somebody put that on their heart, and I just got to, you know, figure out, you know, kind of what to say to that and, you know, set up some good boundaries and that sort of thing. But, so I've not really felt like, I have not felt ashamed or anything like that. I just know what it's going to take. And I want to be a light for people to be like, hey, if you do, and I do feel that. I mean, Chattanooga, especially where we live, is a really big philanthropic city. Mm-hmm. And so there's some, you know, there's been some, you know, I feel like we're on the shoulders of some giants that have given away a lot of wealth and made a special community here, through kind of the renaissance of downtown. But Kelly and I are especially into some, you know, race relation things that we want to kind of reconcile and really give some advantage educations for kids that are not getting that. And so that's really been big on our heart. And not even only that, I mean, we want to help their, you know, their reading and math. We want to give them the confidence and the just kind of the type, you know, the type life that I had growing up. We want to help give that to a bunch of young boys. And give them a lot of strong mentors, which Joe's kind of leading a mentor group. It's just really been transformational. And I could talk about that the whole time, but that's really kind of what Kel and I are focused on now. So we've gone really deep into the school and, you know, we've given over $5 million to the school right now. And that's kind of just the beginning probably of what we're going to continue to do. But we've got really big goals on this school being, and I know, the St. Benedict's guy, Father Leahy was on. Yeah. He was on your podcast,
on the show.
And so I drove. You know, my wife and I and our principal, we've been up to his school and a board member. And going into that school, you know, I think about my life and having some moments, big moments. That was a big moment, being at that school, because I saw the future of what's going to happen in Chattanooga when I went to that school. Because we're building a lot of the same stuff, and we're making it Chattanooga. And that's what Father Leahy said. He said, you know what, look at everything we're doing, you know, copy stuff, but he goes, you got to make it Chattanooga centric. And I totally agree. We got to do it our way here, but there's a lot of really neat things they're doing up there, but that's kind of what I feel like we're called to do right now.
You know, and Ted, I'd love to bring you back on the show so we can talk about our passion, which is mentoring and discipling boys. And helping them become not just good men, but godly men who are going to be those generational men like your dad and your grandfather. You're right. We can do a whole show on that. And I can't wait to bring you back on. I mean, it was such a pleasure to talk to Friar Leahy when he came on. Such a wonderful, humble man. And I remember him telling me on the show that he said, when I asked him to define success for their school, and he told me that when he meets the children of the graduates, Ted, that just hit me, man. I mean, that choked me up when he said that. He said, because he knew the kind of environments that those kids came from. And so to see them become generational men, that now he says, when he runs into one of his students, says, you know, Mr. Leahy, let me introduce you to my son and my daughter and my wife. He says, Joe, you can't put a price tag on that. He said, that's success for me. He said, not them getting into Harvard, not them going to Princeton. He says, but Joe, he says, seeing that, hearing that, he said, it just touches my heart. And so what you guys are doing, what you and Kelly and all of us are trying to do at Chattanooga Prep is we're trying to plant some seeds that's going to be generational. And so I'm definitely going to bring you back on to talk about that. But back to this topic, Ted, because contrary to what we see in the media, I know there's a lot of wealthy Christians who try to be discreet about their wealth. And just like you sharing the story about you, Kelly, being approached in a theater, you know, I know why they're discreet about it. But it also seems to me that those same Christians are also shy about expressing their faith publicly. Why do you think that's the case?
That's a great question. I think I don't know why they're not wanting to express their faith. I think maybe it's just some private people. They just are wanting to discreetly give. They don't want to be on the radar. because it is. Like, I think you become a target. That's why, mm-hmm. because you become a target for people, and then you're letting down people. Like that yeah. example I gave earlier. You give 25 grand to something, and they're like, "Oh, that's it." You're like, "What? Where are we? What world are we living in? How mm-hmm. am I letting you down?" Mm-hmm. And just people are always wanting things from you, and you've got to really have a good plan. Like I've got a wealthy fan friend, and he kind of gives three buckets. He said he gives a third to his church out of a big percent that he gives, but he right. gives a third to his church, a third to a local nonprofit, and a third to a global nonprofit. Mm-hmm. And like, he's like, that's what me and my family have sat down and discussed. And I think that's what you really got to do if you've got wealth, is just to have a firm plan. And that way it's just not chaos, and you and your wife are sharing the same message of people that are always asking from you, like, "Oh no, no, you know, our family have sat down," and I, you know, we are very open with our kids talking about giving and what we do and where we give and that sort of thing. And so I think just having a distinct plan of what you do, and a lot of wealthy people I know have their own foundations. And, you know, have a grant process, and you can go to a website, or they'll have a family office that administers that and mm-hmm. kind of says, "Hey, this is the three things we give to. And if it doesn't fall on this, it's not what we're going to do." Right. So I think, you know, and especially for somebody from me who's, you know, not come from a lot of wealth, that's kind of created my own wealth, that, you know, the first couple of years were kind of chaotic. We're just writing checks to everything. And then we're like, "Man, this doesn't feel good. This isn't, you know, this is not from our heart, really." Mm-hmm. And so now we've got a really, you know, distinct plan what we're doing. And it takes a lot of the burden off of you, knowing what, you know, a lot of that chaos is just like, "No, this is what we do. Sorry. Deal with it."
You know, I never thought about it that way. But, you know, when I asked that question, I knew that was kind of a tough question to ask you. But you just said that they feel like it's a target on their back. Mm-hmm. And so, now that I think about it, yes, if you're going, even if you don't talk about what your wealth is, if you talk about your faith and they find out that you have wealth, they're expecting things as far as, because you're, quote, a man of God, that you're just going to give to everything, that.
Well, my partners talk about this a lot. Like, who are your real friends too? Mm-hmm. Right. You get a lot of new friends once you kind of hit it big. And so, you know, that's constantly, and one of my partners is, you know, he's a single guy, and he just really sometimes struggles with, like, you know, do these girls really like me, mm-hmm. you know, for who I am, or am I just, you know, security and financial security for them? So, that's something you got to kind of keep in your thoughts as well.
Yeah. You know, and Ted, it seems that at least in Christian circles, it's common to talk about not having money when you're a Christian. Right. Oh, woe is me, needing money, and even raising money, you know, for the church or whatever. But when it comes to talking about making money, it seems like mm-hmm. it's a taboo subject. Do you mm-hmm. agree with that? And if so, why do you think that's the case in the Christian arena, that it's taboo to talk about making money?
Yeah, isn't that strange? It yeah. is true, though. I mean, it is. There's people out there that do not want to talk about making money. And I wonder why that is. Maybe it's just, I guess pastors are leading churches and they don't want to talk about material things. And I understand that is a definitely thing, but you kind of need money to make churches go and nonprofits yeah. and to make a difference. You need money, no doubt about it. Like, I see it every day. So I'm not really sure why it's such a taboo thing. That's a good question. I don't know. What are your thoughts?
I'll tell you something that's interesting to me now, being on the nonprofit side of this, now running a nonprofit, is that I have a new respect and a new appreciation for churches now, because I realize now that, yeah, it takes money. You know, it takes money to be able to do the things that you want to do. And you're going to need people who are willing to give generously and faithfully to it. And so when I hear people cringe when they say, "Oh, that church is asking for my money," it makes me cringe now, because I'm thinking, obviously, you've never run a business, or you've never run a nonprofit before, because how do you think you're able to provide those services without having the financial means to do it? You know, I once heard Michael Jordan say that money, he said it's on an interview, that money only solves money problems. Did you know, when Michael Jordan was at the height of his career, he was, man, you know, those Be Like Mike commercials and everything. And he says money only solves money problems. And for many people, including Christian men, they believe that their lives would be so much easier if they didn't have to worry about money. What would you say to men, Ted, who believe that financial security and prosperity is the key to their happiness? And I put happiness in air quotes.
That is not a true statement at all. And I think once you kind of do, I've seen this with a lot of people that make a lot of money, it kind of reveals like your character anyway. Mm-hmm. Because some people want to give it away. Some people want to go buy a bunch of dumb stuff and, you know, live a very, hedonism life too. Mm-hmm. I feel like a lot of, they will, do things that they shouldn't be doing. And then it just leads to like a fall, like a big fall. If you don't have a firm plantation in Christ, if your foundation's not solid, and it can definitely ruin you. You see, look at all the people that hit the lottery, right?
Yeah.
They end up becoming bankrupt, like because they didn't know the steps it took to get there. And so if you get all this windfall, you see a lot of folks that just get it you gotta kind of take a long-term look at it and seek advice too. There's a lot of really great people, and there's a great Generous Giving is in town. There's a conference that my wife and I go to that's really great, and there's some really neat people in town. The McClellan Foundation puts that on. It's just an amazing group of people that think about this stuff. And and also it's really interesting. Some of the wealthiest people I know, you never know it, Joe. Mm-hmm. You would never know it. They just drive used cars. They don't have a crazy nice house, and they're quiet about it, and very anonymous givers too. I know a lot of folks that give away. You'd blow your mind if you knew some of the money giving away anonymously. And golly, what a heart for people that do that. Yeah. And never seek the credit, never want the glory. That just they see a need and they give to it in a really big way. And I'm telling you, we have a lot of those folks in Chattanooga that have really kind of blown Kelly and I away.
Yeah, yes, we do, Ted. I remember, and I don't think I shared this with you before, about when Tanya was starting her fitness business. I don't know what year we were in, maybe about year two or three, around that time. And she had just finished a class, and we weren't, at that time, we didn't even have a building yet. And we were operating out of a church, and the church administrator came back and gave us an envelope. And Tanya said, okay, where's this envelope? She said, I don't know. She said, some lady came by and dropped this off and said, give this to Tanya and Joe. And Tanya opened up the envelope and she just screamed. And she started crying. And I said, Tanya, what's going on? And Ted, somebody anonymously gave us $5,000.
Oh my gosh.
That's
so incredible.
And we of course we want to go to the ministry.
Right.
Like, who was she? Who was it like? She said I'd never seen her before. She didn't give us her name. She just said that give this to Joe and Tanya and said use this faithfully for what you guys are doing. And to this day, Ted, we don't know who gave us that.
Tanya
was in tears. I was in tears, man. It was just unbelievable. And you're right, here in Chattanooga. And I will share this other story with you, and I'm hoping, and I won't mention the guy's name, but when I first launched Real Men Connect, this guy who I know, who comes from just a meager background, I know him. I mean, just gave me sold a $3,000 seed into our ministry. And Ted, mm-hmm. I wouldn't accept it because I know that he doesn't have the financial means to do that. He took the money that he was going to buy his daughter a car with when she turned to 16 and says, God told me to give this to you and Real Men Connect.
Oh my goodness.
Ted, unbelievable. Here in Chattanooga, and I know this guy. I know him, and he did not have those kind of finances. He'd been saving that money up for his daughter's car. And I told him, I said, please don't tell your daughter that this was the money you're going to get her a car with. But he says, Joe, me and my wife agree that what you're doing is so important. And we may not even have a podcast now if it wasn't for that initial seed that he sowed. And I mean, I'm telling you, Ted, you're absolutely right. Chattanooga is amazing. I moved here from Florida, but there's some people out there who really, they get it. They get it, and they don't want to. They don't want the fanfare. They don't want to the pats on the backs. You know, and Ty and I, we've done similar things, and because we know so much has been given to us as well. So, and I'm glad that you pointed that out. And Ted, we're running out of time, man. I tell you, man, because there's so many other questions I wanted to ask you, but you know, I'm not going to let you get out of here without asking you the man of our infamous man of questions.
All right, yeah.
And Ted, you know how it works, man. It's five questions, start with the letters M-A-N-U-P, and all they require is your brutal honesty. So my question to you, brother, is, are you ready?
Let's do it.
All right. And we'll be right back after this short break with my guest, Ted Alley. Hey, Mighty Warrior. You know, the great John Wesley once said that if you give him 300 men who fear nothing but God, hate nothing but sin, and are determined to know nothing but Jesus Christ crucified, he said he would set the world on fire. Do you know that one quote changed my life? Because after hearing it, God immediately gave me a vision to build a team of 300 men who would change the world for Christ. But I didn't realize it at the time, that a man is the hardest thing to reach. And if you don't believe me, just ask any pastor or men's ministry leader or even a wife. Now, due to the success of our Real Men Connect podcast, we've managed to reach and teach men all over the world in 43 countries and still counting. But John Wesley knew when he spoke those famous words, just like Jesus did, that there's a huge difference between attracting a passive crowd of men and recruiting a committed team of men. So we decided to launch the Real Men 300. The Real Men 300 is an opportunity for you to join an exclusive team of men who've agreed to financially partner with Real Men Connect to be personally mentored, supported, and coached so they can be professionally trained and equipped to mentor, support, and disciple the next generation of men for Christ. So we want to personally help you grow in Christ while you're supporting us in ministry. We're a nonprofit organization, and we rely heavily on your financial support. So we're asking you to consider partnering with us by giving at least $30 a month. That's only a dollar a day to help us help you be the man God called and created you to be. To give or to find out more, just go to realmen300.com. That's realmen300.com and join the 300 today. Mighty Men of God. I'm with my guest, Ted Alling, who's a serial entrepreneur, philanthropist, and husband and father of three wonderful children and a wonderful wife, Kelly. And if Kelly happens to be listening, shout out to you, Kelly. That's my girl. And guys, I'm going to put Ted on the hot seat with the man up questions. And Ted, we're going to put around money and some personal stuff with you. So, man, don't get scared. Let's bring it, man. And so the first letter starts with letter M, and it stands for mistake. And Ted, when it comes to mistake, and let me see how I'm going to phrase it. Okay, what mistake did you learn the most from in starting Access America Transport? See, most people probably think, because you were so successful, you probably made some mistakes too. What was the biggest mistake you made in starting that company?
Man, can we just have a whole podcast on mistakes? That'll be like...
But obviously you overcame it, so it can't be that devastating.
My biggest mistakes, man, starting Access America. I'd say... I really had probably taking too much credit for things. Mm-hmm. I think early on it was like, oh yeah, I'm the man. Ted did this. Man, my wife, let me just tell you this. She literally, we were a trucking logistics company. Mm-hmm. And so on the weekends, we would go to truck stops, Kelly and I. And I'd be knocking on doors of truckers and talking to them about, you know, where they're delivering their next load and if I could help them with their backhaul. And my wife and I would get in the backs of trucks on the weekends and talk to drivers, like, for a while. Okay. And give them my car and be like, hey, man, will you deliver in Savannah? Call me, you know? And so really, honestly, having her by my side was such a superpower. Mm-hmm. I took for granted. And so, you know, I think a lot of guys out there are married and, the old ball and chain and, you know, bringing me down, dude, whatever. Like, she's like she's like the cape. Like, I'm like, you know, I'm like her cape. And just so really having, not giving my wife enough credit because I traveled a lot early on. And it was hard, you know, raising three kids and I was just grinding away at all hours on my phone too much and on my computer too much. And so I would say just being, you know, probably too much of a maybe workaholic and not giving her as much credit as I should have.
Now, you just gave me another topic now to bring you back on the show to talk about of, you know, of being a workaholic sometimes. Because I didn't know that. I didn't know that you were like that because you and Kelly seemed to have such a great connection and partnership. But that would be a great topic to bring you back on to talk about because
Joe,
I don't think we can do enough topics on that.
Hey, Joe. I've heard your weekly schedule. We could talk about workaholics. I've never seen my plan every second out like they do, like
but
you do.
The key is balance, man. The key is balance. Now, the A stands for attitude. If there was one attitude you could change in the heart of Christian men when it comes to money, wealth, and finances, what would it be?
You know, I would say, you know, I would just encourage them to be more generous than they think. Mm-hmm. You know, it's like, you know, everyone can give a little bit of their money. And I'd say, here's what I'd say. You need to give money that makes you uncomfortable, right? Instead of like, I know I can give whatever, $100 or 200, whatever, 1,000, whatever it is. Mm-hmm. Give a little bit more, like your buddy who gave you that money for the podcast.
Yeah.
Like that made him feel uncomfortable.
Oh yeah. Made me feel uncomfortable.
Right. I think that's the key. Honestly do is to give the money. Give a little bit more money that makes you uncomfortable, that you lay in bed at night and be like, oh my goodness, Lord, what have I done? But then it just makes you rely more on him.
Yeah, yeah.
Right?
Amen.
And so that's kind of what I'm thinking, I would say, for a men especially, be like, you know, let's just kind of, work on the hearts of men and on being more generous.
All right. Now, I couldn't wait to ask you this question. The N stands for next, Ted, because I know what we're doing now with the school for boys and everything, and that's awesome. But I want to get a glimpse into your vision. What would be the next big thing you would do for God if you knew you couldn't fail? And I know it's going to have something probably to do with the school, but I want to know, what is that? What's going on in your head, and what vision would you pursue if you knew you couldn't fail?
Yeah. So I'm really big on kind of breaking down some racial barriers right now, mm-hmm. and in our community and in the country and that sort of thing. So one thing I think, you know, I say this a lot of my best friends, you know, like, how many black guys do you have in your cell phone? Oh, zero. Mm-hmm. Or oh, we all have that one guy, he doesn't count. I'm trying to really work on kind of some race relations things, and it just starts with like genuine love and relationships with people that don't have the same background you had or upbringing you had. And really, I think that's where Kelly and I's heart is right now. And, you know, through our mentor program that Joe leads, we have a lot of guys like that, you know, like that are like that, that don't have those relationships. Mm-hmm. And I'm hearing stuff now be like, hey, we're having dinner with their family, you know, what should I do? What should I bring? You know, I'm like, oh my gosh, it's working. Like, there's like genuine relationships that are happening through the boy who both, you know, the parents and the mentors are like, hey, we're on your team. We're in the stands. We're all cheering you on. So you've got extra help here to make it through the school and make it through, you know, middle and high school to go to college and that sort of thing. So I think, you know, the big thing for me right now is just a long-term view on I really believe in my heart the school is going to be something really special. Mm-hmm. It already has become something, and we are going to kind of be a really, you know, we want to teach these boys 21st century skills and give them, you know, like one thing we want to teach them in high school is stuff about how to run your own podcast.
Right.
Like that's going to be a class where every boy know how to do a podcast. Mm-hmm. They understand SEO. They understand UX, UI. They understand how to code. They're going to be exposed. Like what we want to do is really expose them to a lot of different things that they've not been exposed to, mm-hmm. and find out what they like, what they're kind of drawn to. And then let's go deep into that. Like, that's it. Oh, don't care what it is. Art, you know, business, whatever, you know, medicine. Let's just like go really deep on that and give them every opportunity they can have. So the school, I believe the school is going to be on 60 Minutes one day, which, you know, St. Benedict's was. And mm-hmm. I believe it's going to be a model that people all over the world are going to come see and kind of see what we're doing here. So
that's so exciting, Ted. You know, I think you bring up a great point about breaking down the racial barriers, because one of the to me, I think, is that elixir for kids is getting exposure. Because I came from the background that those kids that were targeting through the Chattanooga Prep. But at the same time, you mentioned something that I'm hoping that the men out there listening to, that you just said, that you're getting the men, the mentors, exposed to the environment that these boys are from as well. And so it's reciprocal, that they're being exposed to things that they're not used to seeing. And we had Chris Broussard. I don't know if you're familiar with Chris Broussard from ESPN and Fox Sports. But he does a lot with racial reconciliation, of bringing the cultures together. And he says one of the easiest ways to bring cultures together is have them sit down at the table to eat together.
Love
he
it.
Says, and just something, he says, not having these big forums and all these things, but having panel discussions. He says, breaking bread together, doing life on life with each other. He says that would bring down more racial barriers than anything. So I'm glad to see that that's part of your vision, Ted. Now, Ted, the U stands for understand. What do you understand better now about wealth that you didn't understand when you were younger?
That's a great, maybe the responsibility with wealth. Because I've seen some people do some really good things, and I've seen some people do some really bad things. And I think you've got to have that foundation in Christ. And I think you've got to be able to pray about it and not just go insane with it. And to really have a plan. Like I know I said that earlier, but you've just got to sit down with your spouse or yourself and commit to a plan. And say, you know, I've been blessed with this, and what do I want to do? Do I want to just continue to do more business stuff? Do I want to give it away? Do I want to, you know, leave a family legacy, have a foundation? Do I want to set up, you know, like these, you know, set my kids up for life with this? And, you know, if you do that, you know, Warren Buffett talks about, you know, you want to give them enough money so they don't have to do anything. Mm-hmm. And I love that advice, because, you know, if Warren Buffett, you know, his kids is great grandkids would never have to work. And he doesn't want that for them. Right. Because, you know, and I know people that have, you know, been given a lot and not had to work. And man, it's sad. Like yeah. They really don't understand the struggle, what it takes to get there. And so, my kids definitely, you know, I want to teach them the work ethic that my parents, you know, gave us and my in-laws gave my wife. So, yeah, I think that's what I would say.
All right, great. And Ted, we'll let you out of here with this last question. The P stands for problem. And when it comes to money, what problem do you still struggle with even today?
Oh, I mean, ego. I mean, I have to, you know, I think I'm big and bad and I've done so well and blah, 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 pat myself on the back. And man, that is just, I can take no credit. I mean, it is just like, then my whole lenses have changed, and hearing your story and, you know, the obstacles that you've overcome, it's like, oh my gosh, you've been so much more successful in life than I am. I mean, I really believe that too. I'm, you know, it's just, my lenses have changed on that. And mm-hmm. so I've just had this perfect, you know, not perfect, but I've had a very ideal life growing up, and I've been given this opportunity, which, you know, I want to help our other people get the same opportunities I had. And so I would just say Ted's ego is my biggest problem, is thinking I'm this big bad entrepreneur sometimes.
I just have a hard time believing. I'm hung around you long enough now that I don't see that part of you come out.
Dude, hey, listen, that it's there.
Maybe I need to talk to Kelly more about that part, because I don't even see that part of you, man. But I'm glad that you shared that, man. I thank you so much, Ted, for being so transparent and authentic with us, because that's one reason I asked that question, because it's easy to look from the outside in to say, wow, this guy, Ted, he has it all together, man. He's not worried about anything. Look, you know, he's set up for life and everything. But we as men, we all struggle, and there's nothing wrong with struggling. And I tell people, if you're struggling, that means you're trying at least. And so there's nothing wrong with struggling. It's just that we don't usually talk about our struggles. So I'm glad that you are able to share that with us, man. I really appreciate that.
Brother, thank you so much for having me on. This is incredible. I love your podcast, and you're doing such great ministry out there.
And I know you and Kelly are two of my biggest cheerleaders, and you guys believe in what we're doing here, and I appreciate it, man. And Ted, if they wanted to find out more about what you're currently working on and what you're doing, especially with the Chattanooga Preparatory School for Boys, what would be the best way they can reach out to you or connect with you?
Yeah, I love anyone ever wants to come take a visit at what we're doing. It's a 6-12 school. We just have sixth graders right now, and we're adding a grade every year. But anyone out there wants to check out what we're doing, it's chat, or you come go to the website, ask for a tour. Love to meet you and take you on a tour. But the website's just ChattanoogaPrep.com.
That's ChattanoogaPrep.com. We'll make sure we put that in the show notes for you guys as well. Thanks so much, Ted, for being so gracious with your time, and I really appreciate it.
All right, brother. Thank you so much.
Oh, my pleasure. And guys, do us a favor. If you liked the show, and I hope you did, because I learned a lot today from talking to Ted, take about 30 seconds to go over to iTunes and rate the program for us. It's the best way to help us get this program in the hands, ears, and hearts of men just like you. And please don't keep us a secret. Share us with your friends. So until next time, I'm Joe Martin, your man builder with RealMenConnect.com, reminding you that we are males by birth, but we are men by choice. So each and every day, choose to be the man that God called and created you to be, because a male is a terrible thing to waste. So until next time, stay strong, stay blessed, and as always, stay in God's grip.
Thank you for listening to the Real Men Connect podcast with Dr. Joe Martin. Real Men Connect isn't just a podcast. It's a mission, ministry, and movement to help good men become the great men God called and created us to be. And the best is yet to come. So if you enjoyed this episode, go ahead and leave us a review in iTunes. It really helps us to build the podcast and to reach, teach, and impact more men, all for the glory of God. And make sure you check out RealMenConnect.com to get our free tools and resources to help you go from good man to great man God's way. Again, that's RealMenConnect.com. Thank you for listening. We'll see you in the next episode.